The economics of instruction are tough, but especially for a gyroplane CFI. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. At the annual convention and fly-in of the Popular Rotorcraft Association earlier this month in Mentone, Indiana, there was a meeting for all the gyroplane CFIs in attendance. There are only 10 people in that group photo and a fair bit of white hair. A number of factors keeps that number shrinking. Economics is one, just as it is for any independent Part 61 instructor. But would-be gyroplane students face unique challenges. The FAA appears to be on a mission to end the availability of formal training for its own private rotorcraft gyroplane certificate. There are no new standard category gyroplanes in production for use as trainers, and none have been certificated since the 1960s. In Europe, factory-built LSA gyros are available for training, but in the U.S., while the FAA has made a sport pilot certificate available for gyroplanes, it has a standing ban on production of SLSA gyros themselves, so all training must be done in amateur-built experimentals under LOTAs, or Letters of Deviation Authority. The problem there is the FAA shut off issuance of any new LOTAs 2 years ago, so as machines reach their life limits, they can't be replaced. Because there are no gyroplanes available to rent, students have no way to complete their SOLA requirements without first building their own machines. The FAA is, in effect, forcing the entire sport underground. So, whenever there's an experimental rotorcraft fly-in of significant size anywhere in the country, it presents a rare opportunity for students to book some dual time with a gyro CFI. At Mentone, one of the instructors putting in lots of hours with students was Chris Burgess, who towed his Snowbird Adventurer tandem trainer from his base in Maryland. I was fortunate to get a chance to chat with Chris one morning before his first appointment showed up. Chris, let me ask you how you got into gyroplanes. I think you have a military helicopter background.
Yeah, I was flying helicopters in Vietnam in 68 and 69. And, of course, that gave me a love relationship to helicopters, to rotorcraft. And then the Benson has always been on my mind since, you know, I was a kid. Seeing it in Popular Rotorcraft, or not Popular Rotorcraft, in Popular Mechanics magazine. And even while I was in Vietnam, I actually had joined PRA. And so I was receiving their magazine in Vietnam. And when I got home, I saw a Benson. I was told there was a Benson in a hangar, in a back hangar that nobody was flying. And, was I interested? Well, yeah, I was interested. So I took a look, and sure enough, I found this ready-to-fly Benson gyrocopter in a hangar, and the guy who had built it was I think he was afraid of it, and he didn't understand it. It was the dentist that built it, and he didn't want to fly it, but I was all ready to fly it. All I had to do was find out how much it cost, and it was the price was right, so I bought it, and that's how it started. And that was 1971.
All right, now in 1971 there weren't tandems around to be taught in, so the irony is that you're a CFI now who was probably self-taught then.
That's correct. I took it out to the runway and tried to take off. That's the thing to do. And I thought, being a helicopter pilot, I could do that without any problem. And well, I got really very close to takeoff, but then it kept running off the runway to the left-hand side of the runway. It kept running on the left-hand side of the runway, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. You know, and I was doing this for about a half hour. And I went in and talked to a guy who taught me to fly airplanes a long time ago, an instructor. And he said, well, are you using the rudder or are you trying to steer it? I said, well, I'm trying to steer it. He says, well, get on the rudder. He says, as soon as you start going down the runway, the rudder's effective. That's exactly what was wrong. So I went back out, got on the rudders, and it popped into the air right away. And so now the problem was go around the airport and then get back in and land. And landings are different because I'm, you know, helicopter pilot. I was used to coming into a hover and stopping at 3 feet off the ground. But that's not, you can't do that with a gyroplane. You've got to come in at full speed, essentially. And I didn't know that at first. So the first couple of landings were kind of hairy. But once I got through the landings, then it all started to fall in place very easily. So,
well, how did you transition from a self-taught single-place gyroplane pilot to an instructor? I mean, you had to get up through commercial, and you must have taken it fairly seriously.
Well, I already had commercial helicopter because of the training in the Army. And so adding commercial gyroplane was just a matter of having an examiner from the FAA come and watch me. And he issued my commercial license that way in a single-seat gyro. But then in 1987, I had a group of five people contact me that said, you're the most experienced. You know, you're the only guy that knows how to do this. You know, you need to start instructing. And I said, well, buy me an aircraft and I'll do it. And so they bought a Parsons tandem trainer, and I instructed in that for 10 years. So that's how I got started.
Well, now you go back to the bad old days of engine reliability with the, I assume that the first Parsons you had probably had a McCulloch drone engine on it.
Yeah. that was the problem with that aircraft, is that I had engine trouble. We were replacing engines probably once every year, and having engine failures two or three times a year was not uncommon. And that got kind of tiring after 10 years of that. And that's when I started to find something with a more reliable engine, and that's when I got into the Snowbird. I saw that they had a gyroplane already flying with a Honda engine, and that, to me, Honda means dependability. And so I immediately jumped on that aircraft and bought it. So,
all right, now you had this Honda in the air for almost 900 hours before you had a lick of trouble with it, and it was a fairly, it was something that could happen to any engine, and you've got it back together now, and it's back in the air. You expect another 900 hours out of it?
I sure hope so. This happened last year, and I had 11 years with the machine at that time, and it was running the day that I found the problem. It was running, but just through further investigation, and I found this issue that needed to be addressed, and we took care of it. And like you say, I'm ready for that engine to go another 12 years and 900 hours.
Let's talk about the machine you chose. Why the Snowbird? Was it because it had a layout something like the Parsons you were used to?
Well, the Snowbird is stronger structurally, as far as I'm concerned, for to take the rigors of training. Training, you're always making hard landings or landing sideways or whatever with a student. And the Parsons frame won't take near the beating that this one would. Now, the Parsons frame can be beefed up to take that kind of a beating, but this was already designed that way, designed as a trainer, and it'll take a lot of beating that the Parsons wouldn't take. So that's the layout of the machine. Like you say, that's pretty much it, this triangulated frame. It's a very structurally strong aircraft, and it will take the rigors of training much better than the Parsons. But I want to make a point that Parsons is Parsons trainer, I think, is one of the best trainers. There's no doubt about it.
The Parsons trainer to which Chris refers is basically a stretched version of the old Benson gyrocopter. If you want one today, you'll have to scratch build it from plans. In a moment, how Chris makes gyroplane instruction pencil out, and why he comes back to Mentone every summer. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through innovation. It's what led us to develop Cirrus Flying 2.0, the framework for a bold new take on private aviation. And as a result, the gap between the aircraft we produce and those of our competitors continues to widen. Cirrus knows where the personal aircraft industry is headed. We're already there.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with gyroplane CFI Chris Burgess. Few independent CFIs working under Part 61 make a good living, but it's especially tough in gyroplanes. Let's talk about the life of a CFI, and particularly a gyroplane CFI. A lot of times in the fixed wing world, I've observed that CFIs, if you come back after hours, are sleeping on the couch in the FBO. It's got to be tough to put together a business model as a gyroplane instructor. How do you stay in it?
Well, I'm retired, and if I didn't have the income from that retirement, you couldn't survive as a gyroplane instructor. There's maintaining the aircraft. What we charge per hour is barely covers your maintenance cost. And so and maintenance, insurance, hangar, and so forth. And so I don't know how anybody makes a living doing this. They have to have a secondary income or they can't survive.
Is it at this point in your life, is it more about just the love of flying? I mean, you have to just like flying with new people.
Well, it's always been I wanted to help, and I was the only person doing this, and so I was the only one that could help, and so I wanted to help, and my trying to keep people alive and not let them get hurt, that's the driving force, is I want these people to enjoy what I enjoy, and without getting hurt. And so I'm probably their best vet in my area of the country. There's not too many of us around, so.
Some have talked about the impact it might have if gyroplanes are approved for light sport aircraft status. If that does bring a flood of new people in when they can buy factory-built machines, do you feel that the instructor corps we have now is going to be large enough to handle that influx of people?
I think the instructor corps is decreasing, and that is a problem. You don't have anybody new coming online because the incentive isn't there for them to come online. So, what the long-term outlook is, I'm not really sure. I'm not really certain. LSA, if we get an aircraft light sport approved, yes, that'll improve things because that'll be a factory-built aircraft that somebody can go out and buy and then theoretically receive instruction in without any problem. But the reality is I don't think we're going to see very many, if any, LSA-approved aircraft.
What would you say to a student who is trying to find an instructor to work with? I mean, obviously in gyroplanes, it's somewhat a matter of geographic availability.
Well, the distance to instructors is a problem. I have people that will come to me. I had a fellow from Buffalo, New York. I did Canada at one time, Panama. But now with what happened with 911, we can instruct foreign students without a lot of difficulty. And but the people that I have had people actually have called me and said they're 50 miles away and they say, I'm too far away from you. And the next closest is 500 miles that way or 600 this way. So I don't understand that mentality in a student, but at any rate, I think the people that seek out gyroplane instruction, they really truly have to be driven because we're such a instant gratification type society that we think instant gratification. We can learn to fly this aircraft today, tomorrow will be enough, and we should be done. And it just doesn't work that way. Most people that come to me, I tell them it's a 2-year process to get your license, build an aircraft, get your license. It's a 2-year process. So the individual has to be dedicated. And to me, if they won't go 50 miles to come to you, they're not very dedicated. So part of it is that's the kind of student I'm looking for, someone who is dedicated enough to follow through in a possible 2-year process. So I don't see a flood of people that are like that, but you definitely have the quite a few to choose from that are that way.
Well, now, you have traveled a considerable distance to come to Mentone, Indiana, to the PRA convention to offer instruction here and I guess presumably to just kind of commune with the other gyroplane enthusiasts. What keeps you bringing a machine here? That can't be a pretty economic picture.
Well, flying here will cover my cost of getting here. So I don't lose anything by coming here, and I usually gain because I get to see all the new things that are out here in our industry, and I get to meet all the old friends. Yesterday, everybody that showed up was a former student. So, so the camaraderie of being here, the learning something new, somebody always knows a little piece about the FAA that's changed that you don't know, and somebody knows a little bit about maintenance that you don't know. So you always learn something by coming here. And I feel like I owe PRA because PRA actually gave me a scholarship to get my instructor's license back in 1989. They actually awarded me a scholarship to get my license, and that's what I did. So now I feel like I owe them back, and so that's why I come. And it is fun.
If the FAA ever stops trying so hard to help Darwin out here and takes the brakes off the sport gyroplane marketplace in the U.S., there are at least two European manufacturers with tandems which have already passed the tough Section T regs in the U.K. That's considered equivalent to the LSA industry consensus standards here in the U.S. They'd presumably be available immediately as new trainers in the $80,000 to $100,000 range. If the FAA can be convinced to let experimental amateur-built two-place machines back into the training market in the U.S., there are more CFIs waiting to instruct. One of them is Popular Rotorcraft Association Vice President Tim O'Connor, who got his instructor certificate a few weeks ago and has a robust Farrington Twin Star trainer, but can't instruct in it for compensation. In the meantime, we'll be thankful for guys like Chris Burgess and hope he's able to keep his snowbird flying. You can reach Chris by email at gyrocfi.burgess@gmail.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.